is after him, but it's Fahin who's bounding clear up the hill, and he is a machine. Fahin maintains his unbeaten record, and it's a treble for Willie Mullins and Remy Walsh. Fahin's a champion. Arctic Forest.
It was never in any doubt that it's going to be a magnificent hat-trick in the race for the Willie Mullins trade for Vega, and a treble on the day for Ruby. He didn't have to move a muscle.
Hello and a very warm welcome to the Cheltenham Review Show as we look back on a dramatic few days at the 2022 Cheltenham Festival, and what a few days it was. I'm Patrick Nelly and I'm joined by a stellar cast, including a special guest. We've got Rory DeLargy, who we've brought back from the Cheltenham Countdown. We've also got Ruby Walsh, who's pretty busy in front of the camera over the course of the week and saw everything. And it's great to say we've got Robbie McNamara as our special guest for this particular episode. Okay, right, folks, let's have a run through each of the days. We've got a lot to get through. Each of these will start, obviously, with Tuesday. And Ruby, I'm going to go straight to you. Ruby, back-to-back titles for Honeysuckle. What did you make of her?
I thought she was very good. Look, she was the best horse. What did she beat? Pretty much the same again, other than Appreciated, who, look, probably faced a massive task, even though I believed he was up to it and would have worse in a second, but he didn't. It was a slowly run race, and Honeysuckle was just much too good for him. I thought Rachel was, she would have ridden her anyway, but at least to me, she showed bravery by tucking in at the top of the hill, going down the inside of Not So Sleepy between Zanna here and Appreciated at the back of the third last, and she was always in command. Really good performance, and the crowd got what they wanted to see. PK, I mean, at that stage it was 3-0 to Great Britain, yet the whole place wanted to see Honeysuckle win, and that's the kind of reception she got, and it was wonderful to see. But look, as we saw through the course of the meeting, there looks to be fresh blood coming to take her on, and the future will be interesting.
Very, very interesting. Just a quick word on Appreciated. Bit of dust to settle since that run. Are you and Willie of the opinion that that's not the real Appreciated?
We don't think it is. I'm not sure. Look, he would have loved to have been dragged at a really good gallop like he was in the Supreme 12 months previously. Look, he had to make his own running, but it was his first run in 12 months. You know, we were probably being optimistic as it was.
Yeah, maybe could have been an amazing thing to do. Just again, there's some people that will possibly question whether Honeysuckle should go over fences. It was a question last year. I can't imagine those questions are going to continue now at this stage. Surely it's too late, Ruby, at this stage.
You would think so, but I couldn't see it, even with her value. I'd even be tempted if she was mine to turn her in. You could be tempted to turn her into a broodmare. I mean, you're talking about one hell of a racehorse, and with a huge value, could you go chasing with her? Oh, I'd be slow. Maybe I'm not brave enough. That's why I don't own any horses.
Racehorses. I'm sure there's a few horses knocking about down there. I'm sure
that there is.
A pony or two.
Racehorses. I mean, there's no way. Would I even own a horse of Honeysuckle's caliber? No, I'd be after cashing her in well before now.
Ruby knows a good thing when he sees it. Robbie, what did you make of Honeysuckle? Did you spot anything outside of the obvious, or is she just a mare that you've been following from day dot?
Yeah, I thought it was. I thought she was very good. Thought it was similar to last year. Similar horses to beat. I did think she travelled a bit better, jumped a bit slicker. She had been winning a race very comfortably and giving everyone a bit of a scare going to the last. She was a lot more professional this year. She raced down over the last and quickened way up the hill. Thought it was as good a performance as she's put in. Very impressed.
Yeah, and stick to the same next year for her. Is there any reason, do you think they'll do anything different?
I can't imagine they'd go over fences. I'd say it's either go the same route again or retire to stud.
Ah, here now, don't be saying that, because they might do it. No. That's twice it's got mentioned. I'm going to put an end to that chat. She ain't getting retired, folks. No. That's great fun for the owners, not so much for us. Rory, do you think they'll go to Aintree for the Aintree hurdle, or is it straight to Punchestown, or what would you think?
I'd be very surprised if she went to Aintree. It'd be great to see. But given the way she's been campaigned, it looks like straight to Punchestown is very much on the cards, particularly with the possibility of a clash with Constitution Hill, which has been talked up a fair bit. We'll see whether that materialises or not. He looks like he's going to go to Punchestown. The question is whether he goes in the champion novices hurdle or he goes in the champion itself against her. And I think we'd all love to see that.
Oh, would we? What we will get to. Actually, that's a great, no, that's a lovely segue. Let's talk about Constitution Hill, Robbie. was that the performance? There were quite a few amazing performances. I didn't think Constitution Hill's performance in the Supreme would be beaten in terms of wow factor, but after watching all of them, including Aplutar and everyone else, was that the performance of the week, Constitution Hill, Robbie?
I suppose Aplutar, considering it was Gold Cup, had to be the performance of the week. Constitution Hill, as for novices, it probably was. The way he did everything, he jumped and travelled. He didn't put a foot wrong the whole way, and as soon as he landed over to the last, he took off like a scalded cat. What appreciated did something similar last year. Whether it was which one you'd be putting ahead, I don't know, but it was amazing to watch.
And Constitution, look, this is great. You've had Honeysuckle there a few minutes ago, and now I'm giving you Constitution Hill. Would you be tempted to take on the mayor at Punchestown? Or stick to novice company, obviously.
You'd give it a rattle, I suppose. Whether you'd want to put his reputation on the line that early as a novice, he's only had a couple of runs over hurdles. Whether it's the right thing to do or not, you'd probably have the horse to do it.
What is Ruby? You're a great man for the risk reward cost benefit analysis on this sort of a situation, and we know the Willie Mullins tactic is very much, if he's a novice, run him in novice races. What's the benefit, apart from for us as fans of the sport, to Constitution Hill taking on Honeysuckle at this stage of his career, Punchestown?
I would say very little. I don't see, other than the spectacle, where the benefit is. Probably 120,000, maybe, being the difference in the prize money, is about the only benefit, really. Which is a sizable chunk of money, but I doubt very much that Michael Buckley needs that prize money that he'd be risking running Constitution Hill. I don't see where the risk is versus the reward. As when Punchestown is over, he can never again run the novice race. A hurdle, that is. He can obviously run the novice chase, but not a novice hurdle. So I would think what a season would be for him coming to Punchestown, win 4 from 4, you know, again, mature and grow through the summer. And he could even be a better horse next year when he comes back to take on Honeysuckle in the open company. That would be my preference. It's just probably the way I was taught. It may, people argue, be an old school way of thinking. And maybe that is, and it's all opinion, but that would be what I would be doing. I would be going Punchestown, yeah, definitely, for the Grade 1 novice. And I would have my eyes set on a clash with Honeysuckle in next year's champion hurdle, because he'll go back to the UK. He could go fight in fifth Christmas hurdle. He won't have Honeysuckle in either of those contests, and he'd have to meet her at Cheltenham in March. That's when I think you will see that match.
Yeah. Rory, let's go back a step and think about, obviously, it was a huge wow factor, wasn't it, for Constitution Hill in a supreme hurdle, that a supreme novice that everyone was saying was one of the great, one of the best they've seen in years and years. What did you make of the beaten horses, and how does the form stack up at this very early stage, after just a few days later?
I think there are a number of horses who didn't give the running on the day for varying reasons. Partly due to the false start. Dicer Dynamo, you know, got a bit above himself, obviously caused that false start and never really settled into any rhythm in the race. He set a very strong pace, though, which obviously enabled that big performance to come through. And I would say Mighty Potter didn't give his running. He again was, and he wears the hood anyway, he can be quite keen, but he didn't jump, made a bad mistake at the top of the hill and was pulled up very quickly afterwards. So we didn't get to see what he could do. But to be honest, I think John Bond and Kilcrut have seemed to run reasonably close to the form. They didn't do anything wrong. Kilcrut made a mistake at the first, which put him in a difficult position in terms of his track position. But I think from there on, he's run his race and seen out well. John Bond's run really well. For a hell of a long way. He just got tired at the end trying to match strides with Constitution Hill. And the bottom line is the winner is some kind of freak, because he snapped back on the bridle there. There was that moment where he was tracking out wide of Dicer Dynamo at the top of the hill, and Nico then decided to go back inside again just before that horse fell, which would have been disastrous if he hadn't. It's little decisions like that that results like this hang on. But he was hard on the bridle straight afterwards, and it was clear he was going to win. It was just a case of whether it would be, you know, 3 or 4 lengths, or whether it would be a big margin. And to win by 22 lengths in a race like that from a horse of the quality of John Bond was, you know, absolutely stunning. Whether it was a course record I heard there was some debate about that.
Yeah, what's the story here?
According to the official time is a course record, by quite a way, about 0.7 of a second faster than Annie Parr did when winning the champion hurdle. But time form made it marginally slower than her. Oh. Made it about 0.1 seconds, I think, slower than Annie Parr. And there was an entirely different time on the racing TV clock as well, come the finish. So you had three different times being bandied around 10 minutes after the result. Once you say course record, though, that's, you know, that becomes the big story. But even if it wasn't a course record, it was incredibly close to one, and he would have carried more weight, you know, on similar ground to Annie Parr did. So it's an incredible performance, not just for a novice, but for a horse of his age with no point-to-point back, no bumper backgrounds, no flat background, just on his third start and his first ever start on good ground, which now seems to suit him even better than a soft surface. He's something exceptional. And obviously, I think if he did take on Annie Parr, it really would be a difficult race. That might be reasonably straightforward. I've been saying Annie Parr too much. If he took on Honeysuckle at Punchestown, it genuinely would be, I think it would be each of two, really. I know there's the betting on that at the moment, which heavily favours her. But I think it'll be a tough one to call. He had a hard race. I think you look at that and you think he's done it on the bridle almost, and he's won it very easily. But if you sort of look at his demeanour when he's pulled up, when Nick was posing for the photographs, you can see he had a real blow. He ran pretty close to his limit, I think. But he does it in such a really taking way. He doesn't pull at all. He does everything his jockey asks him to do. And if you speak to Nick, we'd say exactly the same thing. It's a great horse to ride because whatever you want is what he will do. And there are very few horses, even at the top end of the spectrum, who are as easy as that. So what he could do next season is frightening.
Well, we do have prices at the moment. Antipost 4-6, Honeysuckle 11-8, Constitution Hill. But that's
no price in Annie Parr there, no?
No price in Annie Parr, no? Yet. But okay. We can request if Ruby or someone wants to get onto us to say she's come out of retirement. She's had a couple of falls now. But yeah,
she has. She'll be bored of that.
She could be the next Serena Williams, you know.
I didn't realize she held the course record. So
when you were on board,
but to be honest with you, it's probably not something I ever look at. Yeah. It's not like an athletic track that is always in the same place where you always run the same distance. I mean, other than probably the Gold Cup track on Cheltenham, which is on the very inside, everything else is movable. So to be sure that it's in the very same place it was last year or the year before, I'm not so sure.
And obviously, you're only comparing times in the modern era since the early 80s as well.
Yeah.
And of course, it's only since, 98 that we've had some improved drainage there, which means we tend not to be racing on very soft ground. So you're not comparing that with hundreds of other or thousands of other times. So it's worth bearing that in mind. But to do that on, I think a lot of people got the impression it must have been good to firm ground for him to do that. But you look at the times of other races on the day and it stands out like a sore thumb. So you don't measure greatness by times, but they do give you a sort of an indication of how good a horse might be.
Robbie, here's a question. Simple. If Honeysuckle and Constitution Hill rock up at Punchestown, who wins?
Honeysuckle.
No bother. No bother. And how come so convinced?
It takes to get to that level of slickness, the jump and the whole lot, it takes a lot of experience to do it. I think ability wise he could get there in a year or two, just with experience and the whole lot, he'd want to be absolutely special to be able to beat her.
Yeah, we love an up and comer though, don't we? Yeah, as you said, Rory, I think you're right. I think it will be close to Pickham's, but the betting now obviously anti-post on the basis of he probably won't go there. That's why he's a bigger price. Or at least I think so. I'm not a trader. The rest of Tuesday, I'm going to go to you, Ruby. I think you've finished your sandwich. What's your make of the Arkle?
I thought Tom Cannon was very good. Best horse won, but he kept it very straightforward, very confident on him. And Tom was a brilliant piece of placing from Gavin Cromwell to stick in Gabby Naco. Cost him $5,000 to put him in. You're on a blinder to finish second. Blue Lord didn't jump well enough. St. Sam got brought down early. But Tom Cannon was clinical aboard Edward Stone, and he did it impressively.
The mares, it was the mares hurdle.
Stop start race. I wouldn't have predicted Maurice Rock winning the race if you gave me 7 attempts of picking the winner. And I think Mrs. Milner might have been the unlucky one. Something Girl was travelling well, but she got brought down. But Mrs. Milner was badly interfered with. Queens Brook kept at it well, but I thought she'd keep going better in that one. Brazil, obviously, you know, he'd probably been unlucky. As much as Gaelic Warrior jumped right, he created a lot of interference for Brazil outside him. So Brazil probably got his just due rewards at the end. Statler was too good for one Royal Fred. And I thought Derek Fox was brilliant aboard Cory Grambler.
Yeah, it was a really a day for the Brits. I know Honeysuckle obviously took the big race. Robbie, what was your kind of outstanding thought from day one at Cheltenham when you settled down for that cup of tea at the end of the last race?
Honeysuckle. It was just you were hoping she'd do it. It would have taken a below par effort to win it, but going and win back-to-back champion hurdles was it's what you were hoping for. There was some brilliant racing. Cory Groats getting his first winner
and celebrating it.
Yeah,
no fear
of that. but great days racing, brilliant.
Yeah, it was great to see the way. When you see a young trainer like that, knowing that he's got his first Cheltenham chance and really celebrating it, because God knows how long it's going to be. A lot of talk about Rachel Blackmore, obviously, Robbie, before and after and during. It did feel like, obviously, she couldn't have the year that she had last year at the festival. She just couldn't. It just doesn't happen like that. Ruby spoke a bit about it. Have you interacted with her much behind the scenes, or are you like us watching from the outside and just going, wow?
Just watching from the outside.
Yeah.
I know her years. She's as nice as what she comes across. But it's just brilliant to watch. She just throws the reins at him, lets him at it. She got a fall off, Tell Me Something Girl, and she just gets straight back up and out in the race after.
Quite a fall.
Oh, she got Perler. And she's as tough as boots and the ability to match. Everything she does, she makes it look easy, and she's brilliant to watch, and she's brilliant for the sport.
She took a right fall off Tell Me Something Girl. She was brought down, wasn't it? Wasn't there Ruby? Was
it? Yeah.
Was, but like, she landed on the road. Ooh, and the height she bounced off the road and back onto the road. Oh, I was sitting in the truck watching. I can really feel the pain of it myself. But like, just that's, she got brought down those couple of strides after. So when she hit the ground, you were on that road crossing and straight onto another sand on it, but it's still a sound surface, and bounced onto it and back up and back down on her arms. Oh, I was glad to see her stand up and walk away. When the camera panned back, I was thinking she has to be carrying one or both arms.
Yeah, well, she got up and she had a pretty good week. Roy, what was your
good ad for the back protector? That fall. She landed full on the back protector in the first place before she came down again. And obviously, in years gone by, that would have been an absolutely hideous fall to take.
Oh, thank God for those. Roy, your initial view after, you know, day one settled up and all those British trained winners, and we were thinking that, oh my God, they're going to win the Prestbury Cup. No, nobody thought that. My money best. But still, what was your kind of takeaway from day one? If there was one big takeaway,
I've got a few takeaways from it, but it was good to see. Even though the early British successes were expected, it was good to see that it wasn't one way traffic, and it was a reasonably competitive festival. I know there are a lot of very good rides in the week, and one that's kind of slipped through the cracks was Mark Walsh's in Brazil. I thought he gave that a cracking ride, because he had to go to plan B. It was clear that he was always going to be interfered with where he was at an early stage. He did get badly interfered at the second. And Mark then made a decision that he had to move up on the outside of Gaelic Warrior and get close to him. And then there was always the possibility that horse would be jumping in towards him, but he wasn't going to be causing interference with other horses. So if you're three wide of him and the leader's jumping to his right, you know, you've got a number of horses who can do you damage. Whereas as long as he was just on the outside of Gaelic Warrior, he was more in control of what was happening. And also the pace wasn't particularly strong there. So I thought the way Mark wrote that was very sharp. He knew what was going on at an early stage. He changed his tactics accordingly, and he got the win by a short head. And his tactics were probably the difference between victory and defeat there. So I think he deserves a lot of credit for that. And obviously, you know, Derek Fox is right. Got a bit of the plaudits and Danny and Rachel later in the week, obviously, as well. So I thought I'd give Mark a mention there, because that was another very fine tactical ride.
I think he's already got a shrine in the training room as well as Mark Walsh after getting Brazil up to Gaelic Warrior. Was Gaelic Warrior well backed? Was he? I don't know. Right, let's move on to the Wednesday, folks. The Champion Chase, obviously the feature on day two. Now, not for the first time in recent memory, Ruby, the Champion Chase has been set up to be an amazing, epic encounter. And I'm just thinking of horses being pulled out in the morning of the race. Duvan, obviously, unfortunately, getting injured. And now, it was a bit of an anti-climax, wasn't it?
It was, and it's not. It's 2 years ago. You know, Altio got pulled out. Defi Desai went to the start. All he had to do was get around. And he couldn't even manage that. As you said, PK, it's happened on more than one occasion in the past. But look, from the time the tape went back, it was like somebody just turned Shishkin off. He stood there with his 2 years prick going to the tape. The tape flew back. Everything else moved. The Shishkin was just stuck there. And I was taken aback, I must admit. Enegrin Mean was behind him. And I know I was shouting at the television when they were going by the stands, Paul, you just go by him because the dangers are at the front end. He's gone. He missed the first down the back. Paul went by him. A couple of fences later, Shaq and Poursois, who looked to be really enjoying it, almost tripped himself and got rid of Patrick. And what had been billed as a three-horse encounter, all of a sudden there was only one left, and Enegrin Mean absolutely hosed up, which, like, if he went out without the other two, he'd have been 1-6 and, you know, with four to jump. That's the kind of price he probably was. It was a decent performance from him. Glad to see him come back and win it. I was not surprised, but yeah, I was surprised to see Willie get so emotional. It's not something you associate with Willie Mullins, but that's what it meant to him. But I thought he was a good winner of a race that, unfortunately, fell apart.
Yeah, well, it's interesting to see Willie so much, but he hasn't won it before. So I guess, you know, it's the first championship.
Well, it filled his CV, and I think that showed to people exactly how much that meant to him. You know, he's born and bred into race, and I don't think he ever could have believed that he would achieve what he has achieved. And to tick all the boxes, that's just what it means to him. It's how much pride he does take in his job.
Yeah, it was a shame. It was an anticlimax. But look, we have to talk about Shishkin and Robbie. What did you make of the ground excuse offered by Nicky Henderson? Because I guess, as Ruby alluded to there, I mean, does the ground affect them after 100 yards? Is it that obvious? Or is Nicky saying something else?
Well, there was obviously something amiss. You'd imagine it was. It was stones below what he's capable, obviously. And I don't think there was any ill effects or any worries going into the race. So you're hoping for racing sake that's what it was. Like he was beat straight away. It was a big anticlimax. So hopefully that's all it was. Hopefully they get him back on track for Punchestown. Ground is, you'd imagine, it's going to be more to his favour. So it was an anticlimax for a race that everyone is looking forward to as the race of the meeting. So I thought Nurjimi was very good. He probably would have taken a lot of beating anyway. Whether Shishkin would have beat him or not is another story. So hopefully we get to see the rematch in Punchestown.
From your experience, when you see a horse, be it an amazing horse who's got a string of ones next to his name, or a horse who's relatively consistent, run that far below expectations and so early in a race, and you don't get an immediate result from a test to say bloods are wrong, scope badly, and that sort of stuff, like, do you go, right, it's just a one-off? Or do you dig in further and try to think, no, something was wrong that day? Like, how do you think Nicky's going to, like, is he just going to play on, or what's the crack?
Well, I think more often than not, something will show up anyway itself. If he was in good form and sound before the race and good form and sound after the race, the kind of logical thing to do is put it down to the ground and hope for the best that it was a one-off. You know, you can look for excuses and find them sometimes, and other times you don't. Sometimes you might, and it might actually be the reason for it. So hopefully it was just the ground, and hopefully that's the last time we see it like that happening again.
Assuming they meet up at Punchestown, like you suggested, Enegrin Mean and obviously Shaqin, we can't forget about Robbie, and Shishkin. It sounded like, just from what you're saying there, that you thought Enegrin Mean might have put it up to Shishkin regardless. So would you fancy Enegrin Mean in the rematch at Punchestown, or part three, I should say?
Well, did a brilliant race in Ascot. Cheltenham was a different track. Could have played to his strengths a bit more. There wasn't an awful lot between him in Ascot. Shishkin at the line got the better of him. going to the last, after just after the last, it was 6-1, half dozen of the other. So there's not 5 lengths between them. A good jump and a bad jump could see the difference if they get the punches down. You'd love to see the two of them on form and see what they can do, being one all, what the score will be after.
Yeah, the rematch part 3, Nicky's revenge. Rory, your thoughts on Benner Gamine? I mean, like, would you be siding with him at this stage if let's say the two of them rock up the punch down?
Yeah, I mean, you end up siding with them on the basis that he's got nothing to prove. He's got in there and he's won the race. He didn't have to run as well as he did at Ascot when he was beaten. And that's an important point to put in there. The Ascot performance was probably, on paper, at least as good as performance in winning there. He's beaten Funambule Sivola. He probably could have done it by 10 lengths further if needed, but it wasn't needed. So what was left in the tank might be the difference there between his run at Cheltenham and his run at Ascot. What he also proved there, and this is probably the most significant thing, was he's not beholden to tactics. The one thing he did at Ascot against Shishkin was he gives Shishkin a target. You know, he had a target on his back. His plan was to stretch Shishkin to make his jumping count and hope that that horse couldn't get to him in the end. I would say you could now look at him as the kind of horse who could sit behind Shishkin in a race. Assuming Shishkin this was a one-off for him, and then try to use his, I'd say, superior jump. He's a quicker jumper than Shishkin, and there's not much wrong with Shishkin's jump. Well, there was at Cheltenham. I don't think he really hit a fence, but he was slow away from them. And I would say that that an argument could probably use a good jump and then a turn of foot away from it just to get a few lengths in Shishkin. Which might make it harder for that horse to get back to him. Whereas at least at Ascot, Shishkin had something to aim at all the way through the race, essentially, or certainly the latter part of the race. And that makes it, when you give someone that target, they know exactly what they have to do. If you can blindside them a little bit with speed, then that makes it harder. And it means if a jockey doesn't know what tactics you're going to use in a race, it makes it harder for him to plan. So an argument has added that to his portfolio that he didn't really have at Ascot. And that probably now gives him an edge over Shishkin, even if you say, strictly speaking, the best performance of the season over fences over 2 miles was Shishkin at Ascot. I think an argument has now moved on from that, showed that he can take a hard race, which is important, as Ruby mentioned straight after that in our podcast, and that he's now no longer beholden to tactics. He was keen enough held up, but he accepted restraint better than I thought he would. And he looked very happy through the race. It didn't affect his jumping. So now that he can do that, that's another string to his bow. And by definition, that makes him the horse to beat currently.
Hmm. I'm going to assume, obviously Ruby don't know yet, but not Shishkin, but Enigamine and Shaq and Shirley will head to Punches Town. It's just a question of whether Nicky decides. But Nicky could go to Aintree on the basis that Shishkin, he didn't really have a hard race, did he? And that might open the door to Aintree. And I know 2.5 miles he's tempted with before.
I would think Nicky will take Keen Sandham.
Oh, yeah. Celebration Chase, yeah.
One of the unfortunate aftermaths of Foot and Mouth was the creation of the Celebration Chase at Sandown. I thought the programme worked beautifully in that Cheltenham, if you want to go to Aintree 2.5, and then if you wanted one swan song at 2 miles at the end of the year, you only had Punchestown. And unfortunately, when the Foot and Mouth stroke in Cheltenham was cancelled, and transport wasn't allowed, that whole card was created at Sandown, and the Celebration Chase has lasted since, and it will allow Shishkin an alternative than having to come to Punchestown. So that's where he will go.
The petition to remove the Celebration Chase starts now.
It's not the first time I've said it, and I was fortunate enough to win a Celebration Chase or two, and Sandown will be arguing to keep it, but it does have the Kimble Creek. And the program is there. Unfortunately, I just think it's definitely one race too many. And I think at that time of the year, the clashes should be encouraged, whilst I'm allowed, I'm in favour of giving horses options in the late autumn, early winter, because you have to create winners to make the clashes. And then again, maybe in January, allowing horses to split away from each other to create the clash again in March. I think from there on, there shouldn't be allowed to sidestep.
Yeah, we don't have two World Cup finals in the middle of June, do we? A week apart.
Not on the one day.
No, not the one. That's actually Christmas now, next year anyway. So, right, let's talk about the rest of Wednesday. Sir Gerhard of the Ballymore. That was pretty impressive, Ruby. I thought he was pretty good.
Did he do any more than he had done at Leopardstown other than jump better? That's about all. He still beat Three Stripe Life pretty much the same distance, 3.5 lengths in Cheltenham, maybe a little bit less at Leopardstown, but it was a good performance. Prove he stays, and I'd say he ran the right race in that he avoided Constitution Hill.
Definitely.
I'd say that was a good plus. I thought Long Presley was very good in the Brown Advisory. I love watching Charlie Deutsch ride over fences. I think his hands, how he uses his legs, I think he's a great rider to watch. I thought Long Presley definitely announced himself as a Gold Cup horse. Obviously, he'd won the City Isles and the Dipper. I thought he was really good. Commander of Fleet, handicap is a handicap. Fair play to Shane Fitzgerald, be fast or slow. Global Citizen, great for Keelan Woods and Ben Pauling. And will I go to the cross country in the bumper, or do you want to come to everybody else?
Okay, yeah. And like, I love the way this is Rory's podcast. This was Rory's podcast, isn't it? Ruby's podcast. Robbie, I'll bring you in on the champion bumper. Obviously, you've got strong memories of the race. Facile Vega, there was obviously, look, connections, the breeding, everything else. The form looked just a good thing, but he was a massive drifter actually on the day. But what were your initial thoughts on what was a facile win?
Yeah, very good. I was hugely impressed with him in Leopardstown. He's obviously been shown plenty at home. He's a fierce word for him, and he's followed it up. Yeah, sure, it was a very strong race. I liked St. James's Gate. I thought he was very impressive, and he won at home, and he ran a good race. Obviously, they were very fond of American Mike. I'd say going forward, it'll probably turn out to be a very strong race. There's a lot of strength and depth to it, and Facile Vega didn't disappoint.
Yeah, it's rare enough you get a bad bumper, but it did look a particularly good one, didn't it? Facile Vega, where would you see? I mean, would he be a supreme type, or sometimes the bumper can throw up kind of staying types, or what would your initial thoughts be?
I don't know the horse. I would imagine he'd be a supreme novice horse. He looks at plenty of gears. American Mike, you'd imagine, would probably go a bit further. He's a bigger, stronger, staying-looking type. But I'd say wherever he wants to go, Festival Vega, I'd say it is his for the taking.
They've had some record at the festival, that group of owners, haven't they? The Hammer and Trail Syndicate, they do all right. It's rare there's a year where they don't have a winner at the festival. Now, Rory, remarkably, one of the big talking points of day two was not the champion chase, albeit it was a bit of an anticlimax. It was Michael O'Leary trolling Michael O'Leary by putting in a horse to beat Tiger O in the cross country. I watched ITV. I wasn't on Racing TV. I was watching ITV, and obviously they had set it up beautifully to be Tiger O's swan song. And then, yeah, I think a lot of people who are watching ITV in Cheltenham, maybe once, twice a year race fans, were like, "What? Why did Michael O'Leary beat his own horse?" It was very strange.
Yeah, it's I find it's quite surprising how many people were upset by the fact that that Delta Work won. Not because, oh, I really wanted Tiger All to win and Delta Work won and that sort of spoiled the party, but almost as if this was a disgrace. Delta Work. No one complained much that he was actually entered for the race. It was fine. Yeah, Tiger All's going to win. Delta Work's in there because he's going to be taking over next year and he's getting his first sight of the track. But the idea that he shouldn't be in there to win in the first place is absolutely crazy. Now, people will say, well, you know, if Michael O'Leary wanted to engineer the perfect finish for Tiger Roll, then, you know, he wouldn't be putting Delta Work in the race. But on the other hand, no one would have really fancied Tiger Roll to win on softer, heavy ground.
As XP would tell you.
Yeah, exactly. And we expected good ground. We knew that Delta Work would handle softer ground. And Gordon Elliott and Michael O'Leary put two horses in the race on the basis that in one set of circumstances, it would be ideal for one, and in a different set of circumstances, it would be ideal for the other. It's what you do with big races all the time. And if Cheltenham has any real meaning as a championship event, then you can't be deciding that, you know, there were people who know an awful lot better saying Delta Work was too good to run in this race. And when you've got races at the Cheltenham Festival that horses are officially too good to run in, then you've got a problem with races at the Cheltenham Festival. And in fairness, you probably do have a minor problem with the cross-country chase in that we haven't really developed that side of the sport in the UK at all. We built the course at Cheltenham. and you know you got a couple of other meetings through the year, and then you have a big race in March, which is slightly different, and that's all grand. But we haven't really produced cross-country horses, and we're not really interested in doing that. The kind of horses that UK trainers are throwing into the cross-country are usually horses who've been there and done that little bit, maybe got a bit jaded, and we're thinking, well, he's not going to win a Gold Cup now, or even one of the more competitive handicaps, but he might enjoy doing this different thing. So that's a little bit of an issue, but that's a separate argument altogether. In terms of what Michael O'Leary did here, he did exactly the right thing. I know it kind of spoiled his own party, and he's talked about wanting to shoot Jack afterwards. But you know perfectly well that if Jack, I met a young journalist at the festival this year who actually asked Jack Kennedy after the race, did you not think of not going past? he said that's the most ridiculous question I've ever been asked. But in fairness, it was the question that quite a lot of people were thinking. So I think it's good that someone asked that question occasionally. But of course, you know, Jack didn't think for a second about not going past. And you can be damn sure that if Jack had decided, oh, Michael probably wants Tiger Roll to win, I should take a pull, he'd have been getting a cup of tea, wouldn't he? And we know what a cup of tea means. So I thought it was a great result, mostly because Tiger Roll really had to dig, and he threw everything into the race, and he showed what a champion he is, even though he was beaten. Whereas if you decide to make that a walkover for him so he can stroll home by 20 lengths, what does that prove? Absolutely nothing. I think Tiger Roll proved himself more of a hero, more of a legend by getting beaten there and giving his all on his final start than if we'd somehow created a scenario where he had his best chance of winning the race. And I think that has to be hugely important in racing.
It was great TV, if anything. It really was. And the two horses coming in.
The two horses coming into that was terrific. And that Patrick was cool, McCann's, wasn't it? Patrick McCann's photo with that is I think it'll be the enduring image of this festival.
Yeah. Ruby, you're going
to
say?
Yeah, well, Rory's definitely made me think differently about it, having listened to him. And and like if you created the walkover, What will we be having now? Only Tiger Roll should be running the Grand National. had he won 21 lengths. So I agree with you. I think they were damned if they did and damned if they didn't.
It really genuinely was great TV. And actually, I was on ITV watching ITV. I wasn't on ITV. I was watching ITV, and it was such a shame on ITV coverage because they have this very set time because Judge Judy or whatever it is coming up afterwards or Loose Women or whatever's on. And they literally cut about 5 minutes before the two horses walked into the winner's enclosure. So I went over to Racing TV to watch it. That was very unfortunate. But Ed actually knew it. He could almost hear him thinking, saying, I don't think we're going to have enough time to show this. It's going to be great. So see you tomorrow.
You were obviously watching on Virgin Media, were you?
Yes, I was. Yeah.
Because that obviously cuts before ITV, because on ITV, they didn't play the closing sting.
Oh, did they not?
Just left it in silence as Tiger Roll and Delta walked.
Oh, very good.
And I don't think it went off till they went through the gates into the winner's enclosure.
Oh, that's good.
I think that's when it actually cut.
Oh, Virgin Media couldn't care less.
Instead of running, closing, whatever, the closing.
The credits and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Virgin Media. No. They were just like, next. Judge Judith Schleinen. Right, let's go to a question, actually. We've got a question from one of our listeners. Mick Doyle asked the panel, what way will Willie split up Facile Vega, James's Gate, Redemption Day next season? And also, what route would each of you go with American Mike? Okay, I'm going to put the American Mike question to you, Robbie. Where would you go with American Mike, next season?
He looks like a horse that stays very well. I'd imagine it might be a Ballymore and Albert Bartlett horse. Don't know, Ruby will tell you what way Facile Vega go, but
yeah,
you're probably trying to avoid him.
Yeah, that's usually a good idea. Ruby, right, give us the exact maiden hurdles that Facile Vega, James Gate, Redemption Day are going to run in, please.
Yeah, just like that. James Gate's ownership would, to me, suggest his ultimate target will be the Ballymore.
Right.
I don't think you need to be in the Willie Mullins camp to work that part out. And then after that, it will depend on how they jump. You would think Redemption Day looks a speedier type. I would be surprised if he was going up way up in distance. Facile Vega, I know how they all jump, PK, when they jump in maiden hurdles. And you know, if one's a bit clumsy and looks like it needs to go a bit further, or one's really slick and wants to come down a trip, but till they start jumping, you wouldn't know. Obviously, you'd be thinking Champion Bumper, last year's winner, Sir Gerhard, went and won the Ballymore. Champagne Fever, was he the last winner to win a novice hurdle in Cheltenham? He won the Supreme. You know, so there's no set route for them to go. But the only one that you would think would have an ultimate aim was James Gear.
Well, I say this to you, Mick Doyle. Given we didn't know which race Sir Gerhard and Dyser Dynamo were going to go for until 10 a.m. on Sunday before Cheltenham, I think trying to figure out where they're going to go 360 odd days before Cheltenham would be tricky. But we'll see.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Right, let's move on to Thursday. The Turner's Novice Chase was a couple of stories. The story going in was the four-runner race, and then the story going out was, wow, we've got a champion, but he just needed to jump the last. Robbie, when you were watching Galopin Deschamps jump fence to fence and go clear Bob Olinger in such seemingly easy fashion, do you think that this guy is a superstar, is now genuinely a superstar in the making, and he's put that kind of, who's better, him or Bob, or is there still a debate there?
I thought when I saw him in Leopardstown winning, I thought he was a superstar. It was a while since I've seen a novice put in a display like that. He was putting it in Cheltenham, and even the fence he fell out, he jumped perfectly, didn't get the landing gear out properly. I didn't think the real Bob Olinger turned up. He was seemed to be of his collar for a long way, and he made a couple of sloppy jumps. I don't know if he'll ever be as good as Galopin Deschamps, but I don't think the real Bob Olinger turned up in Cheltenham the other day.
Fair enough. So you haven't quite given up on Bob Olinger, that you think next time they meet, assuming they do, it'll be closer. Obviously,
I don't know. Will they? Willie was hinting at Galopin Deschamps going back in trip, even though he's won over 3 miles. And I'd imagine, looking at Bob Olinger, the way he travelled and jumped the other day, that he'd go up and trip. I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to go to Gold Cup route in next year. I don't know what way Galopin Deschamps will go, but Willie was hinting at going back and trip with him.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Would you agree with that, Rory, that perhaps the Bob Olinger we saw was not the one maybe last season even?
I don't think he was even the one we saw at Cork. Okay. Last time out. He definitely... he hasn't looked as good all season as he did last. But again, you know, he was so impressive here that we judge him purely by his run at Cheltenham last year. I thought he did well enough in his prep to have a chance here. But he ran like a horse with a problem. Rachel said he made a noise. I just thought he looked like a horse who'd gone on his wind. And, you know, he seemed to be struggling with that from the top of the hill. Judging by, you know, the way he carried himself. I know he's got slightly high head carriage anyway, but he seemed to be struggling with something. And my immediate reaction was it had to be his wind. And that seemed to be the reaction post-race as well. Although I saw Henry saying they're going to have him thoroughly checked out and see what the issue is. But if it's not wind, I'd be surprised. And then hopefully that's easy enough to correct, but we'll see.
I think AP McCoy mentioned his head carriage did look even higher than normal on ITV. All right, Ruby Walsh, last fence, last hurdle, Cheltenham Festivals. Explain why they are so difficult.
Last one? I don't know why they're so difficult. The end of the race, I couldn't tell you. I had more bad luck at them than most people, but look, they have to be jumped if you're going to win. But just even listening to the lads, like, I didn't know with 8 to jump how this race was going to go. I thought, you know, Galopin had been a bit high early. He'd come down. Bob was coping with it just fine. But I think at the 6 last, when Paul got a really good jump from Galopin Deschamps and Bob Olinger tried to match him, he had the screw behind to make the jump, yet it didn't look that big a jump. And then he was very deliberate at the 5th last, and then Bob Olinger missed the 4th last and it was race over. I don't know. To me, watching Bob Olinger, he's a very safe jumper. He's never been an exuberant jumper. And I wonder, did he twin something, tweak something, pull something? And is that why his head started to lift higher and higher? Now he still beat Busselton 40 lengths, who's rated 129 or 30 or whatever he's rated. But look, I think, you know, for the William Mullins camp, it was just such a pity he fell, because you've probably gone against most public opinion in what race to run him in and put him in the race that you thought he was the right fit for him. And look, people say he didn't win, so you're wrong. But I think we had him in the right race.
I think those people can be scratched off. The one question I was going to ask about Bob Olinger that some people have raised, I'll throw this open to all of you. Is there any talk of maybe just throwing back over hurdles? Anyone got a strong opinion on that?
I just go further over fences.
Really? Robbie, yeah. Is there anything there that you've seen this jumping style that you thought compared to last year, you think, do you know what? He's a hurdler, he's not a chaser.
Not really. I think he, Galopin Deschamps had him under pressure. He wasn't able to cope with him the whole way, and he was making mistakes because of it. I think he'll go out and trip, and he won't be having to do things as quick as he was the last day.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, Rory. Yeah, go on.
Actually, I'm just inclined to agree with what Ruby said earlier on. If you watch the race again and forget what you knew at the end of it, I would say just after halfway, you'd have been very happy to be with Bob Olinger. I thought his jumping was safe and measured. And I was thinking to myself, I see Galopin Deschamps has been very exuberant with his jumping, but he was getting a bit high at his fences. He's using up more energy than he needed to. And I was thinking this might play into the hands of Bob Olinger. It's only from, as Ruby said, five or six out that you started worrying about his jumping. And I don't think this is a fences versus hurdles thing at all, but I think the most important thing is find out whether, as Ruby said, he might have tweaked something or whether his wind was bothering him, get that fixed and try him again. But I wouldn't be making hard and fast decisions about either hurdling or trip until I got to the bottom of what was the issue in the day.
Yeah, as we speak, nothing has emerged yet, or certainly nothing on the news anyway, but we'll see when he's entered up. If he's entered up at Punches Town, then one assumes nothing is too far wrong. It was a very classy interview regarding Henry de Bromhead, and the one I saw when he was the winning trainer, but winning in inverted, or sorry, not Henry de Bromhead, but it was Henry de Bromhead, but winning in inverted commas, I think it's fair to say, after Bob Olinger strolled home alone. Okay, we'll go to the Paddy Power Stayers and Flooring Porter. Rory, he looks a very worthy winner, and he's starting to become reliable, despite all the talk about this fella being a bit of a nutcase.
Yeah, this is. I changed my view on Flooring Porter at Christmas when he was beaten by Classical Dream, because he looked brilliant at times last season, but he also looked very wayward. And the question was, you know, why was he running around? Was it a sign he was a bit ungenuine, or was it, you know, was it just a case of when he really tries, he can't help hanging a bit? And the way he ran at Christmas suggested to me that he was as game as they come, because he could have dropped the bridle at any point in that race, because he lost a lot of ground at the start. Classical Dream got the race run to suit. But you go back and watch that, and he tried every yard to the line to get on terms. So I thought, right, well, the one thing I know about this horse now, other than what we knew last season, was that he is thoroughly genuine. Then he's been given an absolutely copybook ride by Danny Mullins, which you could see it developing from so early. When Classical Dream wasn't going to jump off handy, and I think that wasn't really as much a tactical issue as a you've got to do what Classical Dream wants to do. And if he wants to mess around at the back of the field and throw in the odd buck, then that's what he's going to do. And if he wants to charge forward and take the race by the horns, then he's going to do that as well. I think the jockey is often a little bit of a passenger in that scenario. But once Flooring Porter got to the front, and I don't think too many other jockeys thought about putting pressure in him, they assumed Classical Dream would be doing that. Danny got an easy, but he did it. He showed so much confidence in Flooring Porter. The temptation for a lot of jockeys there would be just press on from the top of the hill and try to get them on the stretch and hope you last home. And Danny had the balls to slow things down on more than one occasion, stack them up behind him and get Flooring Porter doing what he was happy doing, knowing that he'd find plenty for pressure. I think it's been well pointed out before, of course, but it takes nothing away from it. It was a joy to watch all the way through.
Robbie, was that the ride of the meeting, Danny Mullins on Flooring Porter?
It was well up there. Well up there. I watched Ruby's analysis of it the other day, and it was, for such a big race and a complicated horse, I thought it was brilliant. Very, very shrewd at many stages of the race, and then when it came to just controlling an awkward horse after the last, he managed finesse, and yeah, there was a lot of things rolled into one there. It was brilliant to watch.
Ruby, I'm going to come to you in a second, Ruby, but you've been making headlines with your analysis of Danny in the immediate aftermath. And Robbie, I don't know if you saw Ruby's analysis where he actually was able to show how Danny had to bring his left hand over to the other side of the horse's neck to make sure that he wouldn't lug in to the left, I think. Have you ever done that before, Robbie? Is that something that is done on a regular basis or even irregular basis when you were in the saddle? Is that something that you remember doing?
Changing whip?
Yeah, well, no, it wasn't just the whip. No. Ruby, you might explain it better.
Yeah, no, I use his left hand onto the right rein. Yeah, of course, Robbie would have done it. Everybody would have done it at one stage or another, usually on a horse that's hanging very bad. And when your right arm is about to give up, you'd stick the left one on to give your right one a little bit of a rest or maybe to get some more power. But obviously, you're leaving one rein loose then. But Danny did it because he didn't want to lose tension on the right rein. And if he lost tension on the right rein, Florian Porter was going to go to the left. So in order, he needed a shorter hold. He needed to re-grip with his right hand. So he had to stick his left one on just to hold it for a second so he could re-grip with the right. And it's a quick reaction. Not everybody would think of doing it. And if you do what you should do, which would be to put the two reins into one hand and then re-grip with your right hand, Florian Porter would have been gone left on him. He didn't trust Florian Porter not to dive off left if he slackened the grip on his right hand. It was reactive. It was very instinctive. Most people wouldn't know how to do it, but it's to react and do it at the back of the last hurdle in a championship race in Cheltenham. That's even more impressive about it. You might do it riding out at home and the consequences wouldn't matter, if you know what I mean. It was brave. It was very instinctive, very reactive. But Robbie would most certainly have done it at some stage in his life, be it on a pony, a hunter, a racehorse, somewhere along the way, would have ended up with two hands and one rein.
Sorry, Robbie, I should have got Ruby to ask that question rather than me going, have you ever done that thing where the jockeys do the thing and they put the hands on the other side of the horse? Have you not done that before? No, it was brilliant. Your analysis was excellent on ITV, Ruby, and it was a brilliant win. And actually, for those who missed the footage of the owners putting bets on in the betting ring and celebrating afterwards, it was genuinely very, very good television. So great to see Florian Porter make it. And he could be the next big books. What's to stop him going in again next year? Thursday was such a stellar day. We haven't even mentioned Alaho yet, folks. And we are running out of time. Robbie Alaho, I keep going. Was this the performance of the festival? I know we haven't got to Apu Tar, but God, he was spectacular, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's a brilliant horse. I'd love to see him in the Gold Cup, obviously.
Yeah.
He's found a niche with the Ryanair and Plough Tards run in the same colours of the Gold Cup, so he's not going to go that route. You would love to see it. He's an exceptional horse. He'd probably be a Gold Cup horse if a Plough Tard wasn't there. I don't know if Ruby sees him as a Gold Cup horse, but he looks sensational to me. You know?
Would he stay the 3.25, Ruby?
I think we've tried him at 3 too often, PK, without due reward. I know he did win a novice hurdle in Clonmel, slowly run novice hurdle over 3 miles, the Mercedes Turehall novice hurdle, but looks to be beaten in an Albert Bartlett, beaten in an RSA, beaten in a Savage Chase only 14 months ago. He's had plenty of tries at 3 miles and hasn't had much success, so that's why he went back to the minimum trip. Look, who knows? He goes back to Punchestown this year. Will he go 2 miles like he did last year, or will he go up to go 3 miles? I don't know, but to us, he's proven he's not as good a horse at 3 miles.
Yeah, he's very good at 2.5 around Challow, I tell you. So he's, and like, there's no reason why he won't just stay at the Ryanair, like at this stage, unless Apu Tar gets injured or something and Shively Park put their foot down and say, we want a Gold Cup horse. That would be the only reason, maybe.
Best of luck having that conversation.
Well, they did release a statement saying that Sir Gerhard was going for the Ballymore a few days before anyone else had confirmed it. And lo and behold, Rory. Actually, we haven't talked about too many British trained winners. They had a good day in the handicaps on Thursday. It worked.
They didn't just get handicap winners. They had 5 of the first 6 home in the pretemps, and they had 5 in the first 6 home in another one of the handicaps as well. And the for me, the result of the day, to some degree, if you like seeing horses race, was the plate, the old Mildmay Fleet. Cool Cody won that, having not missed a Cheltenham fixture since joining Evan Williams. Joined Evan Williams in the summer of 2020. He has run at every single Cheltenham fixture since then. So you couldn't find a more exposed horse. You couldn't find a horse less trying to hide his light under a bushel than Cool Cody. Not on a good handicap mark, an 11-year-old off 145, so off a not a career high mark, but he's higher than his winning mark. He just goes out there and does it and shows that there is a myth, particularly over fences at Cheltenham. I think it's true with the shorter handicap hurdles, but over fences at Cheltenham, you don't need to be a stone well in, especially if you're very lightly raced. You need to not make any mistakes. Mm. You need to go out there and do everything right on the day. And there's a, if you watch the handicap chases back, you'll see a lot of well-handicapped horses ruin their chance with mistakes or get themselves in the wrong position in the race or a combination of both. And then you get a horse like Cool Cody who just goes out there, gets to the front. People will say, oh, this is a good race for horses who race on the pace, but there are about 10 front runners in the race, so they're going to cut each other's throats. And then you find out that the horses who race towards the front end up, you know, very nearly dominating it anyway. I thought, in a manner of speaking, the key to his victory was the fact that he just got cut up on the final bend, and it looked like he was going to drop back through the field.
Yeah, I thought he was gone. Yeah,
yeah. But Adam Wedge switched him wide, and I think just having to do that allowed the horse to fill his lungs up. I think Cool Cody has tends to just go out there and try to gallop all the way through a race. And it's very hard to do that at this trip. He tends to get, you know, finish a little bit weakly up the hill. But this time, because he's just been interfered with, he's been able to actually get a second wind for the first time. And he ends up finishing off really strongly. It's a smashing horse. Mm-hmm. But you'd never had him down as being well handicapped. The owner said he had £7.50 each way on him. I was very pleased with that. It was great to watch a race like that where I don't think, I mean, you can argue with the handicaps. Oh, well, this is the fact that Brits did well in the handicaps is a sign that the British handicap was just being too harsh on the Irish horses. And in sort of middle distance and staying handicap chases, I think you should know what marks horses should be on. I think it's very hard to handicap novice hurdlers, you know, who've only had, you know, two or three runs. Look at State Man being a great example. And one or two others like that. But with 2.5-3 mile chasers who've been running for four seasons, maybe five seasons, you should know where they are with them. So there is an issue there with maybe how the Irish horses are handicapped in those races. But the fact that these aren't horses who are being hidden away all season, being laid out for Cheltenham handicaps, has to be a good thing for the future of the festival. So we can see these horses more. So trainers can't say, well, there's no point in running them through the winter because they can't win at Cheltenham. Because there have been various examples this year of horses who've been running frequently and still capable of winning handicaps.
Run your horses. Brilliant stuff from Cool Cody. Right, one more question before we hit Friday. Michael Hannon asks, and lads, we are pressed for time, so I'm going to just ask for the race name. If you're backing Sir Gerhard for a race at the 2023 Cheltenham Festival, which race would it be? Robbie, where will Sir Gerhard go?
Back in each way for Champion Hurdle.
Champion Hurdle. Ruby?
I'd probably agree.
Champion Hurdle. Rory?
Having heard that, I'd probably say Champion Hurdle, but my first thought would be Narkel.
So. Oh, okay. It's completely different discipline. Interesting. Okay, so there you go, Michael. Two different races, the Champion Hurdle or the Arkle Chase. We'll see if whether he pops up in a beginner's chase or whether he pops up in a conditions hurdle next up. And now the Gold Cup on the Friday. Lots of talk, obviously, about this race. Lots of talk before, lots of talk after. Rachel Blackmore, boy, did she get it right, Ruby Walsh, on this occasion. And you could tell in her post-race reaction, she really, really was delighted. She was thinking a bit about last year. Was it a perfect ride from her?
It was. I think the race set up perfectly for her as well, though. It was well documented in the build-up that there was a lack of pace and you had three horses that really didn't have a turn of foot as the main market rivals outside of Protectorate. Manila Indo, Album Follow, Galvin, they're dour stares. But there was nothing to make this a dour contest. They didn't go overly quick. And, you know, as hard as Paul Townend and Robbie Power tried to force it on Manila Indo and Album Photo, they're just better horses when they're being dragged rather than forced. And, you know, I thought when Manila Indo pinged the third last and set sail that, yeah, maybe he's going to open up and go. But you knew with how confident Rachel Blackmore was in the pocket behind him that if she gets out in this horse, it's obviously going to fly. And that he did. And he absolutely bolted in. He'd looked a better horse this year. He was brilliant at Haydock. Different ride. He'd have won at Christmas, but he made amends today, and he was a runaway winner.
Yeah, 15 lengths. I was surprised. No, I'm not surprised when you look back. 15 lengths. That is the the longest margin in 27 years. Rory, I assume you can fill us in on who that horse was 27 years ago.
I don't keep a spreadsheet of winning distances in the Gold Cup.
All those books behind you.
Well, yeah, but I'm not, that's why they're there. I haven't memorized them.
It's probably the fellow.
On heavy grind, Master O's won by a
thank you very much.
Margin,
well
yes.
done. Well done. But Rory, if I mean, it obviously happens every year, but what is to stop this fellow winning two more?
Well, if you want to be really brutal about it, you could say this is actually his fourth season over fences. You know, you tend to think of him having his first Gold Cup last year, but of course he was a winner here in the Novices Handicap Chase as a five-year-old and massively impressive that day. And then he went Ryanair the next year, and then it was just turned over in the Gold Cup a year ago. So you can argue that not many horses win Gold Cups in their fifth season over fences. It's a race that is more likely to go to younger horses. But of course, you know, he and Manila Indo are rather going against that this year. But he could easily win another Gold Cup, no doubt about it. I'd be just slightly wary about the winning margin, because Manila Indo, for me, I thought he would stay on strongly through the race. A Plutar would do him for a turn of foot. But Manila Indo really paddling up the hill, which is very unusual for him. This is he's a thorough stayer. And I thought his finishing effort was surprisingly weak. Protectorat, who finished third, made a terrible blunder at the last fence. And the fact that he was gaining ground on Manila Indo shows that the runner-up was stopping to some degree. So that lengthened the margin of victory. But he was still very impressive at Plutard. And he's the one to beat for next year. But, you know, as we've seen many, many times in the past, predicting the Gold Cup result is one of the toughest things to do every year. An awful lot can change for these three milers through the season. Hopefully he'll be back again next year to give it a go. That's all we can hope for, really. But yeah, he's been very, very well managed by Henry. The fact that this is his fourth season over fences, you know, you'd normally expect horses to be showing signs of wear and tear at that stage, but he's better than ever at the moment, and he's been kept pretty fresh and not overfaced through his career. So, as I said, extremely well managed. You know, running in handicaps at the festival as a five-year-old, stepping up marginally in trip as time goes by, and it stood him in very good stead. So I wouldn't make a strong argument why he can't win, but an awful lot can change between now and then.
Yeah, we could see how the novices go. Of course, Lampresse could develop Galopin de Cham, who knows, if he goes up in trip. Robbie, was there anything in the beaten horses or anything in the pack that you thought, you know what, that might bustle up that Plutard, be it a Punchestown or be it next year? Or was it just a case of this fella's miles better?
Probably Protectorat for entry, maybe Asterion for lunge. They're probably a little quicker than the 3.25 around Cheltenham. Totter Asterion for lunge ran a good race for a long way, jumped well. Maybe back in trip, he could be one. Galvin probably would be a Grand National horse down the line. I'd say it was, I thought a very good Gold Cup. Thought the winner was brilliant. Did think the third, fourth and fifth could be, Galvin. I think Galvin could be a Grand National horse down the line, maybe Protectorat for entry.
Is he going to be too highly rated this year, Rory, for a Grand National? Or is he, do you think, well, I don't know what his rating is off the top of my head, but I imagine Grade ones winners, it's hard for them to win Grand Nationals. Although nowadays, probably
well, things,
not.
Yeah, I think yeah. things are changing a little bit. Then I think the Grand National was the aim, the
original plan, wasn't it?
Before he won at Leopardstown at Christmas, and then I think, to be honest, you really have to go either Gold Cup or Grand National. It's proven exceptionally difficult to do both. A few horses have been beaten in the Gold Cup and gone on to win the Grand National, but you're still heading back to Golden Miller.
Really,
for horses are capable of doing both. Yeah.
In the same year, obviously.
In the same year, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And then you run in the, but it's usually you win a Grand National, you end up in the Gold Cup, or, yeah, and then, okay, all right. In terms of other stuff on Friday, there was a quick word on the Fox Hunters, Ruby, because Billoway's win, Patrick afterwards said at the bottom of the hill, I think he said, I think of a squeak here. I think he was literally the only person watching who thought he had a squeak. It was to come from that far back, but was it a case of Billoway scampering up the hill, or was it a case of the Dave Christie horse coming backwards? Manila,
I think it was a case of wing leader just running out of puff and treading water. Mighty Stowaway and himself, you know, they looked to have it between them off the bend. Mighty Stowaway faded and wing leader just got lonely, and Billoway eventually mugged him with the cheek pieces on, but it never looked likely. Patrick thought that at the back of the second last, and fair play to him. But I suppose when you're a jockey, you're always a little bit optimistic. I didn't think Ellie Mae was going to win either off the bend in the Mrs. Paddy Power. I thought Scarlet and Dove had put her in a pocket and she was going to do really well to win, but she dug really deep. Good run for Banbridge in the last from Mark McDonough, and Joseph was nice to see that too. And I thought the one, well, there was a couple early in the card, Vauban Stateman, the nice guy. Wouldn't be surprised to see all those head back to Cheltenham next year in different contests with big chances.
Where is Stateman go next, Ruby?
I would have thought the novice hurdling punches then.
Yeah.
I think he'd get enough a penalty here to suggest he won't be running a handicap anyway. So he'll have the rating for a grade one novice, I would have thought.
Fascinating to see how high up the tree he can go. Right, gentlemen, that's just about everything. I think we've covered just about everything. Was there anything else that I've missed the channel? That's what you wanted to say. Do you know what? Did you see that, PK? Did you see that, listener? Or we'll head off into sunset. We'll have a look. That was it. It was a great week. Believe it or not, only 345 days until the 2023 Cheltenham Festival. We hope you enjoyed the show and the whole of the Cheltenham Countdown series. A big, big thank you to our special guests, Robbie today, Robbie McNamara, Rory and Ruby. I only recently realised that it's 3 hours. For all your thoughts, spectacular 4 days of racing. We, of course, have Grand Nationals to think about. We've got Ayr, we've got Aintree, we've got Ferry House, we've got Punchestown, we've got the Dubai World Cup as well, throw it in there as well. We've got the Lincoln folks coming up this weekend, so don't forget to tune in to our regular weekend tipping slot. That'll be out probably on Friday. We'll be looking ahead to a wonderful weekend of flat racing, but until then, thanks lads, enjoy the rest of your week.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Best of luck
until next time.